In Masechtas Sota and Daf Gimel, there's a very peculiar statement from one of the Amoraim. He declares that Ein Adam Chayta Elam Kei Nichnas by Ruach Shtus. Nobody ever commits a sin unless a spirit of senselessness enters them. Now, this assertion seems to be saying that only when a wave of irrational thinking floods one's brain and sort of cloaks him with utter foolishness does one go ahead and commit a sin. And what's strange about this declaration is that in real life, we don't seem this to be the case. What compels most people to sin is a desire they're faced with. And despite knowing the repercussions, they consciously choose to follow the path of sin since it appears to offer more instantaneous pleasure. We wouldn't label one who gossips about a competitor as foolish. We might call them cruel or mean or selfish, but we wouldn't think they warrant the title foolish. The same applies to someone who looks at something they shouldn't look at or eats something they shouldn't eat. We wouldn't label them as stupid. We would say they're lustful or they're gluttonous. So how do we reconcile these facts with the above declaration? Why are we calling people who sin senseless and stupid? So this week's parsha gives us a clue. In the middle of Moshe's final speech to the Jewish people, as he tells them about the spirits and the morals and the ideals that they will experience in Eretz Yisrael, he inserts a seemingly bizarre comment. Moshe addressed the Jewish people, and he says the following: Ma Hashem alekecha shoyo mimcha ki im liyira. All Hashem asks for you is to fear him. It isn't complicated. All he wants is a little fear. Is that too difficult? Moshe asks the entire Jewish people. Now, what kind of question is that? Of course it's difficult. Of course it's difficult to watch every word that comes out of our mouths every second of the day. Of course it's difficult to watch where our eyes go. Of course it's hard to turn down a job opportunity that conflicts with Shabbos. Of course it's difficult to fast on Tisha B'Av. Fearing Hashem dictates what we say and when we say it, what we wear and how we wear it, what we eat and how we eat it, what we think and how we think it. Why did Moshe make it sound like it's easy? What exactly did Moshe mean when he proclaims that all Hashem asks of us is to fear him? Isn't that a huge mountain to climb? So the following foundational explanation given by the Chinuch can completely alter the way one looks at mitzvahs. The Chinuch in Mitzvah Tzadihei explains that in Hashem's infinite desire to bestow goodness upon man, he created a roadmap promising that all those who follow it will be led to unadulterated goodness. Every single one of the mitzvahs on that map is another nugget of goodness, and if followed properly, envelops the follower with peace and tranquility and harmony and holiness. Some mitzvahs prevent us from being hurtful people. Some mitzvahs make us more benevolent, some more patient. Others are there to give us opportunities to build a relationship with Hashem. The mitzvahs are the instruction manual of how to lead a loving home or raise proper kids or how to ensure society is safe. And they teach us how to cope with sadness and how to properly channel joy. There's no scenario that's not addressed. There's no circumstance that's ignored. They inject them all with goodness. The mitzvahs infuse life with meaning. The common denominator that runs through all the 613 mitzvahs is that they are all here for our own benefit. Not a single human being in the entire history of humanity ever benefited one iota from deviating from Hashem's path. So following this logic, says the Chinuch, Moshe turned to the Jewish people and emphatically declared that these commandments that Hashem lovingly taught me and that I taught you all these years, all 613 of them, are purely for them to attain goodness. Hashem isn't asking anybody to do something detrimental to their pursuit of goodness, for these commandments are the very definition of the pursuit of goodness. It is for this reason that Moshe finished off his declaration by saying, L'tov lach. All Hashem asks of us is to follow the map, and it will lead us to his treasure chest of goodness. L'tov lach, it's all good for you. But there's another layer to this. Not only did Hashem give us the Torah, the roadmap to goodness, He also gave us unfathomable spiritual reward in the next world for following it. Think about that for a moment. Hashem rewards us for following the guidebook that is solely here to give us the greatest life on planet Earth. We get rewarded for living a life of goodness. Is there any other deal on Earth as good as this one? When we realize that every single one of the mitzvahs are here for our own benefit, suddenly it's not nearly as hard to follow them. Suddenly, it's not overly difficult to refrain from doing something we ought not to do. Because when we vividly internalize that refraining from saying something we shouldn't say, or thinking something we shouldn't think, or doing something we shouldn't do is purely for our own personal benefit, it becomes significantly easier to follow suit. And similarly, when we realize that fulfilling the mitzvahs brings the best form of goodness into our lives, as well as unfathomable spiritual reward in the next world, it becomes drastically easier to fulfill them. So therefore, the Gemara in Sait declares that nobody sins unless a spirit of stupidity overcomes them, because how foolish must one be to deviate from the Torah, which is purely in place for our own benefit? How foolish is it to neglect the map leading us to a life of supreme contentment? Imagine you're going to Disney World for the first time, and you only had 6 hours to spend there. And being that time is precious, and there's a lot to see, you would need a plan to ensure that you got the most out of your short visit to the park. Now, imagine if the day before you arrive, you got a letter in the mail from the owner of Disney World. And he personally drew out a map of the places you should go and the places you should avoid and the bridges you should circumvent and the rides that have too long lines. And he tells you go behind this and this go over there and don't go over there. And the shows that you must see and the pathways that get too crowded. Imagine the owner writing it all out for you. Would you take one look at it and say, "Nah, look at how many places he tells me not to go. Look at all the rides and attractions he tells me to avoid. I'm not listening to this," and you throw it in the garbage. How foolish, how dumb. Well, we're basically the same way. How foolish we are to fall to the glitter and the glow of the sins that we commit. How foolish it is to abandon the God-stamped map of a utopian life in exchange for our convoluted version of pleasure. The name of the parsha is Ekev. That's because the very first pasuk in the parsha describes Hashem telling us that if we are careful to fulfill all the mitzvahs, even the seemingly insignificant ones that people step on with their Ekev, their heel of their foot, we will be granted a life of bliss. Merely showing up a few times a year to perform the big, grandiose mitzvahs, while neglecting the hundreds of other seemingly less glamorous ones, is demonstrative to Hashem that we don't view His Torah as a roadmap to goodness, but rather a roadblock getting in the way of our personal hike to happiness. It is precisely the day-to-day grind of following each and every one of the 613 mitzvahs, even the small ones, that reflects our firm realization that all Hashem wants for us is goodness. And in His kindness and in His grace, He showed us exactly how to get there. How foolish it would be for us to miss out even one mitzvah. The only person in the entire Tanakh who is referred to by Tanakh as a tzaddik, a righteous man, is Noach. Noach ish tzaddik. Why is that? Weren't there other righteous men who filled the holy pages of the Torah? So perhaps it's because it says in Mishlei Chav Dalet Tesvav, Sheva Yipol Tzaddik Vekam. A righteous man is one who has the ability to pick himself up despite falling 7 times. And for 120 years, Noach went outside and worked on the table while the naysayers mocked him, and he didn't give up and he didn't budge. He showed up rain or shine. He tried to inspire them to change their ways. They called him crazy, they called him insane, yet he stood there day in, day out, year in, year out, decade in, decade out, never flinching once, because he knew that the best life on earth was a life following Hashem, and no amount of mockery and scorn would convince him otherwise. An Ekev is a heel. The human heel can absorb more pain than any other part of the body. You can stick needles into a heel. You can walk with it on coals. The Torah specifically uses this term to tell us that we must show up as a soldier in Hashem's army, day in and day out. Not only for the big parties and the gatherings, but for the early morning drills and the late night missions and the grinding it out in the heat of the day. A soldier is there no matter the circumstances, and he takes the pain. reign, for he knows there is nothing more rewarding than serving the king. So too we show up, rain or shine, to follow Hashem's Torah with the conviction that there is nothing more rewarding. After the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the subsequent exile into Bavel and the episode with Haman on Purim, the Jewish people enjoyed relative tranquility and prosperity in the country of Persia. Life was good. And one day, out of the blue, King Cyrus, the king of the Persian Empire at the time, decided to grant the Jews permission to move back to Yerushalayim and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And he instructed Mizradas, the royal treasurer, he instructed him to go into the royal vault and remove the kalim, the vessels stolen from the Beis HaMikdash, and thousands upon thousands of vessels were brought out. So Ezra, the leader of the Jewish people at the time, excitedly ran into the town square and he broke the news to the Jewish people, the king is letting us go back, the king is letting us rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And so with the Purim story still fresh in their minds and the threat of complete slaughter of the entire Jewish people still at the forefront of their minds, one would have thought there would have been a national outpour of excitement to go back to Yerushalayim. There should have been ecstatic. There should have been a stampede to begin the pilgrimage back. But no, not even close. Out of the millions of Jews that were living at that time in Persia, shockingly, only 42,360 people picked up and marched with Ezra back to Yerushalayim. 42,360 out of millions and millions and millions. After almost being annihilated by Haman, after going through the pain of getting exiled and watching the Beis HaMikdash burn, we were finally given an opportunity to go back, and yet 95% of us didn't. We liked our life in Persia. Of course, we wanted to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, but conceptually, not actually. We didn't yearn to actually go out there and build it. In the act of such devotion, by these 42,360 people picking themselves up without missing a beat to go serve Hashem with alacrity, was so praiseworthy in the eyes of Hashem that he did something almost never done in Tanakh. He listed each and every family that accompanied Ezra by name. The Porash family, the Asgad family, the Bebai family, the Benai family, the Bethel family, the Nebo family, the Shaboah family, the Ziha family, the Bakbuk family, the Sotai family, the Ami family, the Lai family, the Paruda family, etc. These previously unknownworthy individuals realized the tremendous opportunity they had in front of them, the opportunity to move back to Yerushalayim and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, the opportunity to be one with Hashem and His mitzvahs. They were soldiers in Hashem's army, from the big commandments to the small, from the glamorous to the technical, it made no difference. They were marching in lockstep with Ezra, and therefore in reward, their names got codified for eternity in the most important book in the history of humanity. I once found myself in the office building of BP Print Group, a printing company in Lakewood, New Jersey. Being a large company with well more than a minion, they built a shul inside of their building. And what's unique about this minion is that in addition to the graphic designers and printers and editors and writers that daven there, there is often a large number of mishulachim from Yerushalayim as part of the minion. And they come there to the company to print out their letters of recommendations to attest that they are in need of tzedakah. And what took place during Chazaras Hashat absolutely amazed me. A man got up with a pushka, a charity box in his hand, and began walking up and down the aisles collecting tzedakah. And like in most shuls, only a handful of people actually put something in the pushka. That is, until the man got to the mishulach. And without missing a beat, each and every one of them reached into their pockets and placed some money in the pushka. This impressed me so much because they were actually taking from the very money that they themselves collected by standing out in the rain, going door to door, embarrassing themselves. This was the very money they needed desperately to pay for their wife's chemo treatment, the infertility treatment, the bank that was about to foreclose on their house. They placed some of that money into the pushka. Not a single one of them didn't. Because these people are attracted to a currency of a different kind. A mitzvah that comes walking by is too attractive to pass up. They couldn't hold themselves back. Even after a tear-filled mincha, begging Hashem to save them from their plight, they grabbed the mitzvah of tzedakah with a smile on their face before it walked them by, because for them, it was simply too precious not to. When we realize how each and every mitzvah contains a precious ingredient for a life of goodness, we realize how foolish it is to overlook any of them. Suddenly, each and every mitzvah is prized. Each one is too cherished to step on, and none of them are insignificant. Like puzzle pieces, each one make up the ultimate life of goodness stamped with the approval of Hashem. Shlomo HaMelech summed it up best. In Koheles, Ches, Hey, Hashemer mitzvah lo yeda davara. Keepers of mitzvahs will know no evil. When we realize how fortunate we are to be privy to these mitzvahs, we will do whatever it takes to properly fulfill them, and when we do, aside for living life to its fullest, our names get etched in Hashem's heavenly record books for eternity. Ashreinu shezachinu. How fortunate are we that we merited this. We are the luckiest people on the face of the earth, and it's not even close.